So I appreciate it. And I sent you those questions. And so I didn't mean to just for us to jump into random stuff. But I had the first question I got, because I read through like several articles and interviews with or about you. And I remember reading, it might have been in the NPR piece, that people don't often ask how you're doing. And I think that is something that gets overlooked quite often, even when we're talking about comics and movies and TV shows. So thinking about everything going on, thinking about the highs and the lows, how are you doing? How has 2020 been for you, besides the very obvious, you know, shitstorm we're seeing?
It's, I'm doing fine. I was just telling my son today, I was like, mommy feels like, I think a little sad, but I think I just feel, I don't know, just a little overwhelmed, not necessarily in a bad way, but because things have like picked up so quickly for me at a weird time. I often feel like this guilt of celebrating my wins when everything else is just to hell. So I'm like trying to navigate that, because 2020 has been that for me. It's been a lot of personal wins, but on the grander scale, like, it's just been horrific as well. Because like with the Kickstarter, I had no idea, one, that I was even going to do a Kickstarter, and then to like just kind of not even necessarily do it on a whim. Like, the whole point of me, the whole motivation of me doing the Kickstarter was so that I would be able to pay the artist, because I'm like, I don't have a ton of money to, you know, pay up front, because I had just lost my job in October. So I was like really going into the freelance thing. And then I was like, you know, driving Lyft and whatever to like just kind of have that extra money to kind of create. And it was just so happened that COVID happened, so the Lyft thing stopped. But even before then, the Kickstarter, I was like, you know what, let me just go ahead and just see if folks will support this. And they did, overwhelmingly, which just really, I'm still processing that. And
I was going to ask you, how is that? What were you anticipating going in? Because a Kickstarter is, you know, make or break, and I'm about to go on attempt at number three, but I think I mean, I don't know what was that like, you know, just going into it and then coming out of it with the success you've seen.
So like before this Kickstarter, I had a failed one that I had in conjunction with Make Comics. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with Ed Williams, but he has this. You definitely, I definitely like to put you in contact with him, because he's definitely somebody to also talk to, because he's another Black creative and he's doing some amazing things with Make. So there was a Braxton comic, which was about this superhero who was also a mom as well. So we're going to do a graphic novel. We had already written everything. We just needed, again, to like get paid for the art, because that is expensive. And
absolutely.
And rightfully so. So it was very ambitious. We probably should, I mean, hindsight is 2020, but probably should have just broken it up into issues. But we were just trying to go for the whole thing and just get the entire graphic novel funded. And that was almost $25,000. And that's what we were asking. And that was just too much. Also, other factors of people just not being familiar with it. And it's a lot of stuff that I know now, but I didn't know then. So going into the Kickstarter in February, because Living Heroes, that one, the two pages that I had done, had been received so well, and folks were asking like, yo, are we going to get more? Like, what are you doing with this? I approached Aaron. I'm like, hey, if I were to do a Kickstarter, would you be on board? Like, would you have enough time to commit to this? Like, what are your feelings? And she was all for it. So I'm like, all right, cool. So started working on promo stuff. And next thing I knew, like, I was like stalling to go on Kickstarter to like set everything up, because it's daunting. Like, they're asking you all these questions and like, what's too much information? What information do you put to like get people to read it and like want to support it? So, I just sat down. Like, when I don't know how to start stuff, it scares me and it freezes me up and I procrastinate a lot. That's why y'all get these videos and stuff. Yes. From me, because that is me procrastinating for what I'm supposed to be doing. So when I finally sat down and just filled it out one by one. I'm just like, okay, they're just asking you a question. Answer the question. So it took a lot of me, like, just gently pushing myself and actually bullying myself to, like, get it done. So launched the Kickstarter, and I think I was at the gym. I had just finished working out, and at 12 o'clock kick, so I brought my laptop and everything, and I hit, like, live, like, Kickstarter to go live, and I think I was, like, walking back to the desk where the coaches were, because I do CrossFit like a weirdo, and I'm walking past, and my phone starts, like, my watch is, like, going off, my phone's going off. I'm like, what the hell? So, like, within a matter of 2 minutes, there were already, like, 15 or 20 backers. And I was like, what in the world is happening? And I, my phone was basically in my hand for a full damn near 24 hours, except for sleeping. And by the time I woke up that Saturday, I was almost, I think it was like at 80% of my goal. And I just couldn't believe it, because to me, Living Heroes is just super niche. Because it wasn't like marketing as this, like, oh, this is a Black thing. It's just, cause I always feel like I'm Black, so whatever I'm doing is going to be Black. So I don't necessarily need to lean into the fact that, you know, it is Black. Cause I'm like, yo, I'm Black, I'm doing this. So therefore it is Black content. So the fact that Living Single is not Friends, and people outside of the Black community are just not, like, really realizing, like, how big and important that show has been for us. And these Marvel characters outside of Storm and maybe Misty Knight, just now Monica Rambeau are really starting to understand who she is. And then, you know, there's She-Hulk. So I'm just like, are people going to know what this is, or is it too niche? But apparently it wasn't too niche, because it got funded within the 24 hours, and I was just... And I wasn't asking for small money. It was like nine grand to get it done. And then to over exceed that, I just, again, still processing and just so grateful and thankful, because it was something that I wanted to make, and to have folks support that and be able to put it out, like, it, I don't know, like, it just changed me in a number of ways. But I think the biggest way it changed me is I know what happens when I get out of my own way. So getting out of my own way, which has basically been this whole entire year, me not shying away from stuff because I feel like I'm going to fail at it. Like, it's, you know, you don't know until you try. So just really just going hard in that reason, and, like, being kind to myself and saying, like, hey, you know, yeah, went to school, you're supposed to be a scientist, you worked for a little bit, but you weren't really happy, but this is what you're doing, this is what you love, so go all out. And if people rock with it, they rock with it. If they don't, they don't. It's, you know, at the end of the day, it's what you are creating for yourself. I mean, that's what I've been, basically my whole thing is, like, I'm creating these things for me, because stuff that I would like to see, and I'm happy that other folks also want to see it, but that's never the end goal. Because I feel like when you start creating for others, then you end up having your moments where stuff starts to seem disingenuous, or you do something that you probably shouldn't have done because your heart wasn't really in the right place.
You know, I think, well, I mean, for starters, congratulations on that, because that you did the groundwork, and I think the credit is due there, that you built so much of your resume and just your own personal collection of work itself, that people really found the honesty in your project. And I think when you end up looking at how far you've come and what you've done, and then landing right on this project, which from here everything else is just going to take off, I think it shows, like you were saying, if you get out of your own way, there's a lot that you can accomplish. And I know that feeling. Oh my gosh, doing the Kickstarter the second time, I'm just like, all right, here we go, do I want to do this, how am I going to do this?
The
procrastination getting in your head and asking for the money, and then you see so many other projects. Like, I have Matthew Cherry's Hair Love Kickstarter saved, and I always go back to it to look at, you know what I'm saying? Like, how much work went into that. And just, that's on a totally different scale. But to be able to look to projects like your own as well and say, this is the kind of success you can find when you put in the work, because it's not like you didn't do nothing. And Black folks, Black creators got to work twice, three times, four times as hard just to get a little bit. So to see that was like truly inspiring, and I ended up saving yours as well, because I'm like, this is the blueprint. This is one of the blueprints for like successful Black art that really isn't trying to be anything but itself. So it's really refreshing to see that and to see it come out the way it did. And my sister's constantly watching that. We grew up with Living Single. My sister's watching The Parkers constantly.
Yes.
When I saw your product the very first time, what came into my head was like Martin and A Different World and like Family Matters, and then all the different Black characters that would end up being, transformed into like some of the Black men I didn't see growing up in comics, but I'm only seeing now. You know what I'm saying? So
no, I totally get what you're saying. Because
being able to re-envision that was a beautiful thing.
Because Erin, we joke back and forth, but she was like, "Wow, you actually made me like Sam Wilson." I was like, "I made myself like Sam Wilson." But when I go back and I read him in the Marvel comics, I'm just like, the later iterations, the more recent ones, they're fine, but that character's history is just so, I don't even know how I want to, I don't want to call him a step and fetch Negro, because I'm like, wow, you sound like a white man.
You got to remember who's writing him.
Yes.
And who's drawing him, who's creating him. So, and for the longest, it's like, it's going to sound like that because, my wife and I were watching on Netflix, I think it's called Project Power with Jamie Foxx.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I'm watching it, and a lot of it's making me cringe, but there are several Black actors and actresses in the film, and I'm like, hold on a sec, this sounds very weird and very, like disingenuous. I don't understand what's happening sometimes. Yep. And you know, as a person of color, when you absorb content from other people of color, there are things that you get just because it's like the cosmos connect y'all. But I'm listening and watching, and I'm like, this is really strange. And I go and I look, and the director and the screenwriter is all white dudes. And I'm like, okay.
And I'm like, and then this is like, that makes sense. And I'm happy that you felt that way too, because I'm like, so if I don't really talk about something on the timeline, it's because I really like it, but I don't want to. That's another thing. I guess this is all related, but that's another thing that I learned about, not necessarily about myself, but also in my online presence, because before starting out, like, I spent a lot of time pointing out what was wrong with stuff, which is fine, because we still need to do that, but also at the same time, just like, but I'm not getting anything from this, so why focus on that? So then I just started to make this transition, of course, shout out to therapy, but looking at things, like spending my time with stuff that I actually do enjoy, that does serve me, because it's another thing, like, I just feel like there is much more to say when you actually care about a thing. You can still critique it, you know, I critique Marvel and DC all damn day. But there are still like stories and characters that I really do care for. So with Project Power, when I was watching it, and I think the part when the main character, or one of the main characters, she raps while she's at school, and I'm just kind of like, okay. But I don't really know any Black people who have ever like daydreamed that particular scenario happening like that.
So, you would think that, though, if you were looking at Black people as a person who was not Black, you'd be like, I bet some of these Negroes think about freestyling all the time. Like, no, that is not what we do. Even my friends who did do that. It just wasn't coming from a place of authenticity. And then you see that, and then people get frustrated, and we voice our very necessary concerns that y'all ain't doing the work in hiring and recruiting creators of color, and then it comes out in
poor quality.
Yeah, it shows. And so it's like you have to sit with a product that is not satisfying, and then when you voice that dissatisfaction, you somehow get shit for it too. You know, because Twitter is a place where you got all the folks on the Trump side and the right side that's like, why is everything gonna be about race? Why is this race baiting? It's not. Imagine that. Nicole Hannah-Jones tweeted like a few weeks ago, and it lives in my mind rent-free just every single day. She said, imagine what you would be doing now if you hadn't been like fighting racism or systemic oppression. Like, what would you be doing with your life? What's the like goals or dreams or aspirations you'd be going after? And it like stopped me. I sat there and I'm like, damn, I don't know, made me really sad because I think yes. about how actively I try to fight against that. You know, like I write commentary on like politics and this, that, and the other, and then in the arts as well. But then it's like, I just want a break, man. I want to enjoy comic books and video games and shit because it's fun.
For real. No, I mean, that is very real. And sometimes I find myself battling with that. And I think the compromise that I found, and maybe the balance, is I love doing deep dives. Mm-hmm. Before I shied away from older comics, because I'm like, well, you already know what you're going to get just because of who predominantly was writing comics for the big two or big three or however you want to consider it. So mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? Let me not focus on the writers or the editors. Let me just focus on the characters, because even by doing that, there are still critiques that will come out and be visible, but it's not focusing on them. Like, let me read what you wrote for the way that you wrote it, and what it says, because I think it just speaks more. Because like when you're writing, you're creating, either stuff comes out subconsciously or you purposely put it there, but it's always a reflection of either sometimes yourself or what is currently going on in your life or just the world at large. Mm-hmm. So in my deep dives, that's just kind of how I've gone about things. Like I did one where I read Wanda Maximoff's history from beginning all the way up to her, the last solo comic that she had. So I think that was maybe 2016 or something. So it was a lot of comics that I read. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, I was like, wow, the Avengers are terrible to mutants. And Wanda's not technically a mutant anymore, but when she was, that was very important to her character and why she reacted the way that she did and how some of the folks around her failed her. So mm-hmm. in doing that, it speaks to, you know, one, just how, again, white folks telling on themselves, because the mutants right. aren't supposed to be, you know, this allegory for marginalized folks. This is how mm-hmm. y'all really feel. Like, you're hiding behind these characters, but this is also how you feel, and this is coming out. And in doing so far, everything that I've read, like, the mutants really get a bad end of the stick. Like, they get treated so terribly, especially the X-Men. But in being able to create conversations that way, I like that, instead of focusing solely on, you know, this writer, that writer, or just avoiding deep dives, period, because you know it's going to be a mess, because there are some good stories in there. There's a great mm-hmm. Superman and Vixen when they meet for the first time. I love that story because it shows, one, folks who usually write for Superman, usually, not all the time, I feel like have a better, I don't know, moral compass, I guess, sometimes, and it shows through, or maybe Superman forces you to have a better moral compass when you're writing for him, because that shows, like, Clark mm-hmm. could have accused Vixen of stealing and destroying Fur Coast, but no, Superman and Clark at the same time, Clark got into his journalism and got down to the bottom of it, and Vixen knowing and having faith that Superman would do something like that, set it up the way that she did so that they could go to the source and get rid of the poachers in India. I love that story.
I think, and I think you're right about characters like Superman. I saw this commentary a long time ago about him, and it said that Clark Kent is a commentary on humanity. At least Clark mm-hmm. Kent is Superman's, you know, Kal-El's commentary on humanity. And it I don't know why that struck a chord with me. And Superman has always been in such a bizarre space the last few years because of the the films, and then how do you take him out of this poster boy, cookie cutter, like good guy persona without compromising who he was when he first came out? And I don't know, Superman has, for me, has always just been in a strange space. As a kid, I was a huge fan. And I think, like, when we think back to our childhood heroes and the people who informed us as children, like, informed the, like, pop culture, it says a lot about the direction that writing and comic books were at that time, because it was Superman and Batman. It's so wild. Superman and Batman were it for me as a kid, and then, you know, Tobey Maguire pops up as Spider-Man, and the rest is history. Toby is literally just, he is in my my Hall of Fame. I know we've got everybody, right?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, Miles is number one, and everybody else can take a seat after that. Because Into the Spider-Verse, I, to this day, is still, like, the greatest piece of movie.
It's beautiful.
Oh, my God. It still makes me so emotional. I'll sit there and cry, and I'm just like, I've seen this movie like 100 times. You know, I taught it in the classroom because it informed me now in the ways I wish pop culture informed me as a child.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? And, and you mentioning X-Men is so appropriate because as a kid, as a black kid, I saw X-Men, and and I kept asking myself, what's wrong? Not what's wrong with them. Like, there's nothing wrong with them, but I'm like, what's wrong because of their treatment? Like, the way people are treating them, and the way people are going after them, and even the way some of their allies are going after them. And I was just like, what is wrong? And then you grow up, and now at this age, X-Men is all the rave. Everybody really, like, loves and appreciates them now because we acknowledge that they really do represent us.
And that's where I've been torn. Not because anything is wrong with them, but because of who's written them. And again, like, I've been going in because I too, for a short period of time, was like, oh yeah, yeah, like, Xavier is supposed to be Martin Luther King Jr. Jr. And like, Magneto is supposed to be Malcolm X. Sure, that if that's who they were fashioned behind, but also, like, that's not a compliment to either one of them. Because of the way white folks have written them. Now, Magneto, he makes points. He does. But not in the way that Malcolm X did. Like, some of the stuff, a lot of stuff that Magneto does, Malcolm X would not do. Same thing with Xavier and Martin Luther King. Like, Martin Luther King was going around with a band of good blacks saying, hey, you should keep a, like, we're like, you should treat us like humans because we're not like those bad mutants. Like, that always troubled me. I didn't know how, like, why, but as I got older, I'm like, oh wait, oh, it's respectability politics. That's why it never really settled, like, you know, sat with me as okay. And that's why now I just let it all go, because I'm like, no, I know we talk about Batman and everything that Bruce does, but at least Bruce, when he sees these kids, you know, getting ready to go down the same path as him, and they know, he knows that whether he stops them or not, he has no power to stop them, and whether he intervenes or not, they're going to go down this path, so he might as well equip them and give them the tools and the knowledge that they need to do what it is that they feel that they need to do. Unfortunately, they feel as though they need to get revenge in this way, or this is the way that they need to deal with their trauma. Xavier doesn't do that at all. Because we see Cyclops. Like, when you find out that Xavier is the root of mostly everybody's whatever, then you start to see characters like Cyclops totally different.
Listen, Scott was my dude.
Yeah.
That was my boy growing up. And I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't even tell you why. It was so strange. You know, as a kid, when characters just appeal to you, and you're not at that age where you can process their, you know, their being. I couldn't even tell you how it started, but Scott, oh my gosh. And then I wish they did. I really wish they did him justice on screen.
Me too.
Because it felt like they treated him like a like a real side character, when in fact he is the like a lot of the glue, much more of the glue than they gave him on screen or on paper. So I wow.
Because if you think about it, like Scott is, if you want to like again allegory, want to just focus specifically on Black folks, Scott is, you know, us when we're like doing all of this work to show that we are worthy and that we have these leadership qualities and stuff, and we legitimately do have them, but have not had a chance to actually heal. Because Scott is never given the chance to heal and to deal with his main issues until Emma Frost comes along. And I know we like to joke about, you know, their entanglement and stuff like that. But in Grant Morrison's new X-Men, which is, I know folks love it. I have a love-hate relationship with it. But what I did love is that, unfortunately, through a mental affair, Emma was able to get to the root of Scott's problem. And if you see from there, Scott becomes a better leader and also just a better person in general when Emma like helps him get to where he needs to get to. Charles didn't give him that. His dad didn't give him that. No one was able to. And Emma, in a sense, really didn't give it to him either, but she provided a space for him to like be real with the fact that, yo, I'm sitting up trying to be this perfect so-and-so, but I'm not. Like, sometimes I am broken, and it's okay that I am, so, like, let me figure that out.
And that doesn't, man, like you said, it shines a light on who the professor really is. And we had these very shallow ideas about them, and like you said, the comparisons to civil rights leaders, and then you get older and you're able to dissect that and you're like, wait a minute, hold on.
Right, like what are y'all really saying?
Exactly. And I appreciate that this is the moment I'm able to grasp all those concepts and ideas, the concepts and ideas I couldn't grapple with 20 years ago,
right?
But that now, with our access to technology and then our access to just talk to each other and develop like these spaces, these forums to break this down together and inform each other, I appreciate these characters even more. And it makes me think about people like Batman, right? And even people like Black Manta. So Black Manta, I have been fixated on for so long because of how wrong they did him. They did Black Manta so wrong for years. And I spoke to my friends about like I wish I could rewrite him. I was gonna mess around and make like a screenplay for one of my screenwriting classes and just rewrite Black Manta and just do him some kind of justice. But
yes,
oh my gosh, it's wild. And you know,
same thing with Cyborg.
Yes,
Something right now about him and how they keep changing his body design and. I mean, doing it unintentionally, but for a character whose crux of him really has to do with this mutilation of his body, to continue to change his design around is not the same as giving Batman a smaller mask or longer ears or giving Superman red draws or no draws at all. Right. But like, it's deeper because you're switching up how his body looks. So further unintentional mutilation going on. And then just Cyborg's whole thing is just, so anyway, whenever that's out, I'll let you, because it has been a lot. It has been a whirlwind. And it wasn't until Doom Patrol, which I didn't even expect to even like that show, where I was like, oh. Now we're actually like getting into the meat of things with Cyborg. And I think David Walker attempted that with his run, but of course, because we can't have nice things, nothing was really able to like really come out of that.
All right. There's a difference between refinement and replacement, right? So he doesn't get refined like, you know, design wise, like Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
You know, because they know it's integral to Superman and Batman's being. But for some reason, the irony of not acknowledging those changes to Cyborg compromising his being.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really astounding. And then I approach Cyborg in the sense of like RoboCop has a lot of like nihilistic.
Yes.
And like, what does it mean to be, to exist? What does it mean to be human? Am I still human if I only have like a heart and a lung, or like a stomach and a brain, or
right?
What does that mean? And for Cyborg, it's doubly in that it is, you know, am I human? And then also, as a human, what am I worth considering who I am as a Black man? So like, yep. I've got my artificial intelligence and then myself, my worth as a Black man. And so that hasn't been explored in the way that I would love to explore that. And when
it needs to be explored.
Right, right, right. Because he doesn't, Cyborg is not, could you imagine being Black and just part Black, not part Black, but you're Black and part machine. And then it's 21st century and you have to grapple with your existence as well as your Black existence. Like that intersectionality is crazy. And that does not get addressed because, I mean, of course, people who write for him aren't thinking about that. It's just like, how can he change his arm into a different kind of canon? Like,
so it can look cool.
What? Exactly. So he can look cool as opposed to what is he really experiencing? What is he suffering from? And speaking of X-Men, and this is only the second question, but I appreciate where the conversation has gone, and believe me, I would love to continue all these conversations in the future with you and get to write more about you and your goings on, and maybe even work on things, because it just sounds like so many of our, I was going through so much of what you put online, and I'm like, this is literally what I would hope to accomplish, you know?
But yeah.
I don't have the slightest clue about avenues to follow, and I'm constantly just shooting in the dark and shit, but that's a different story. New Mutants.
Oof.
Is
yikes.
Not only with delays, you know, but
yeah,
then it drops and you've got just like a whole lot of ugly and pretty like toxic,
yes,
shit going on screen. And that's your, you know, that's your arena. So I just wanted to know what were your initial thoughts on it? Magic is hella problematic.
Unnecessarily.
So what's going on? Tell me what you feel about that.
I feel like they somehow managed to make a X-Men movie for races, which is just which is just really wild to me. Not saying that the other ones haven't been like leaning in that, but they went full throttle with this. There was no reason to make Magic just a bigot, because Magic, that doesn't even fit Magic's MO in the comics ever. So that was weird. And then I guess I shouldn't be surprised, or no one really should be, because of what they did with Sunspot and Dr. Reyes, because they've always been darker complexion. Like, they were Afro Latino. So like, I'm not really I do understand why, because the creators just don't care. The folks that made this movie literally don't care. They don't care about the source material, and they don't really care about the characters in themselves. And it's just really unfortunate, because that could have been a movie that could have been like a nice little, way to tie the bow on like the Fox, you know, them doing the X movies and stuff like that. But it's just going to end in the same shit show that it started. And maybe that is poetic in itself. So,
right. Right.
It's just really unfortunate. And again, like, it just really makes you pay attention to, you know, these creators and what they do with these characters that are supposed to represent something that they deal with in real life. And you just see how poorly they deal with the stuff in real life because of how they treat the fictional characters.
You know, I think. I mean, it sucks too. I feel of all the comic book content we have on screen, I think the X-Men has the most potential for just amazing cinematic and narrative storytelling.
Yes.
And if done properly, you know what I mean? Because we've had so many, and it's clear that if you were to line up all the all the Avengers movies, all the Marvel movies, all the Fantastic Four, you know, and everybody's movies are lined up, I feel like X-Men has been the most unpredictable roller coaster ride. And that's because every time they announce a project, our expectations are high. We're also very cognizant of the source material. And I don't know how cognizant the creators of the films or the spinoffs are of the source material, because we're like, what the hell are y'all doing? Why are you doing this with these characters? So it makes me wonder if you could be, if you could mediocre yourself into a position and get a damn X-Men film under your belt, you know?
I guess, you know, I would totally be okay with just an X book. Like, I would be fine with just having access to that. Because I will say, with these newer, so I've my first piece for Marvel is about Kitty Pryde, which is just funny in itself, because that was a character that I couldn't stand. And I went back again to, like, just read her history from when she first joined to everything else. And, like, all of the other ex-women, she's been hold the whole time. Like, there are just stuff, things that have happened to her that is just really unfortunate and just shouldn't have been. But with Marauders, and I've read it all the way through, all the way up to the 12th issue that hasn't came out yet, like, in the past 6 days, I think I've read it 3 times, so I'm dreaming about Marauders at this point. But in it, it's the first, I can honestly say, with this series, even though it's kind of been a little bit all over the place, issue 12 kind of ties it all together. And it's the first time that Kitty Pryde, or Kate Pryde, as she wants to be now, actually has a Fantasia moment and frees herself. Like, she finally has that, and she actually has the same thing that she got mad about Storm with, because there was that, you know, she flipped out about the Mohawk change and just Storm changing as a person. And there's actually a really beautiful moment in Uncanny X-Men where her and Storm have this conversation out in the sky, because Storm, like, pretty much does, like, a bring your narrow ass here type of moment and, like, brings her into the sky or whatever. But they have this little exchange. And also in X-Men Gold, they kind of retouch on that. But Kitty really has that Storm Mohawk type of self-realization for herself in Marauders. And I actually love that. Because, wow, so this character who could not understand what this other one was going through is now going through the same thing. But thankfully, you know, Storm has enough grace to be like, hey, I'm here for you. I'm not holding it against you because you were a child. But, yeah, like, this is definitely what I was going through. So now you see it.
I'm waiting for Roro to get hers.
Because, oh my God!
It's on the horizon, you know. It's in my mind, you know what I mean. In my mind, I'm just saying, it's got it on the horizon where the cultural impact of Black Panther and what Chadwick was able to do with that and continue to do, and what he was fighting with off screen, but then what it just did for the culture and for creators at large, I feel is, I mean, it's absolutely necessary for a figure like Storm to get that. And it could be so, if done correctly, you know, and you get the right people, you could have another cultural inflection point where someone like Storm is like that poster child that, oh my damn, this is where we are, and it's moved people to tears. And but again, if it's done correctly, and we can only hope that that's the case, because I don't know how and where Black Panther happened and how they were able to get the folks they got, but it just, you know, chef's kiss. But I'm waiting for Storm to get hers, because it's been too long now.
It's been way too long now. And like, the material is there. Personally, I think it would be really impactful, and they would have a lot to say to just kind of modernize it if they were to focus on the point where she is questioning, all that she is. That Mohawk period or whatever is just so important for that character. Because I don't think Chris Claremont knew this when he was writing it, but he was just like subconsciously sort of speaking to a Black woman's experience within like the workspace and just who you're going to be. And if you assert yourself, then people are afraid of you. But if you are too docile at the same time, folks are wanting to take advantage of that and always expect that of you. Like a lot of that is, the foundation is there. The story could be told better, you know, with the Black woman behind it or just someone to be able to really speak to that experience. But like, that's the area to focus on with her. That pocket of time, because I feel like that is very close to what happened in Black Panther in itself. Black Panther the movie made me actually like Black Panther the character. Like I could not stand T'Challa just because it was just like he was always invaluable. Like how are you this king but you are perfect? I know a lot of folks did not like with the newer Black Panther run because it shows that he is flawed, but I like that. Like I like to see that these characters who are superior and super and stuff like that, that we're reminded that they are human. I feel like that's what separates and why you don't automatically think of superheroes as cops, because you remember that, yo, these are just regular folks who are doing, like are volunteering to save people versus, you know, the way that police work in our country or whatever. So like there's Spider-Man, I just got done with, his earlier run, The Amazing Spider-Man, around the time when he and Mary Jane get married, and it is some of the best Peter Parker I've ever read because he deals with a lot of that. And you get to see Peter understanding, you know, he has these superpowers, but there are things in this country that happen that are well beyond his power, even as great as he is.
Right. And we're on the horizon. We are really on the cusp of that. Those same themes and that same concern being taken up by Miles, and yes. I am all for it, and I feel like it's going to evolve into just a greater, like it's going to capitalize on everything that was hit on and into the Spider-Verse, and even just in some of the runs now, like they're fleshing him out far beyond like the Black Spider-Man, right? And we're not going to stick with that microaggression. Like he's not going to be like a Black Peter Parker. Miles Morales is his own person, right? And he's got these superpowers and these abilities. Spider-Man has superpowers and abilities similar, but we don't want to add that microaggression to Miles, and we want that continued autonomy. And I think it's really coming to a head now. But you're right. The point of these superheroes is to watch them stumble and trip and fall as we do, but then succeed in the ways that we wish we could because of the abilities they have. But it's just,
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying? It's
just, and that's because I think the reason why for Miles and like a lot of these characters that are older and we love or newer and then we love is because we're having more at hand at them. Like, so for like the newer X-Men, I'll just bring that up because the X-Room there is still pretty white, but also a lot more diverse than what it was before. So we're getting better stories for Miles Morales. I cannot stand Bendis with all my heart, but I am thankful for Miles. Ironheart, I'm still on the fence about that just because of her origin and stuff, but I'm happy that she's there and Eve Ewing is writing for her now. But like we're getting these better stories for these characters because we're having a little bit more input and or just, you know, like marginalized folks period, just having more input on these characters, so we're able to, they're bringing them to other heights, to new heights that they've never been able to achieve before, because, you know, I hate to say this, but, you know, white folks, their views are just very stunted and limited, right, in a lot of ways.
And when you're in that, when you when you're in that position of privilege for so long, there's no look, all we've had to fight. Like, all we do, all we know is fight. And we don't, you know, we all we know is fight and survive. Or at least that's the story that's been told through folks who are not writers of color. We fight, we survive, but then we also thrive. We have all of these incredible stories and storytellers that you need to let us in on the writing process. You need to let us in the writing, the writer's room. You need to let us in on those panels and those discussions. Otherwise, you're going to botch some really, really critical characters' lives. And it is just, it's great to see that transition where folks like Coates and Ewing can be on, you know, comic book covers as writers.
Right.
And very necessary voices at that. So I hope it's considering COVID's really thrown shit out of whack, it's comforting to know we're getting some of those voices in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's why I said, like, this year's just been so bittersweet, because I mean the pandemic is horrific and none of this is normal. And the fact that anybody can create anything during this is just a miracle in itself. But also, like, some really great things are coming out of it. I just hate that it has to be this way. Because it sucks. It's like, how do you celebrate stuff, but also at the same time reconcile with how terrible everything is at the same time? That balance, I still don't really know it, but it's exhausting.
And it makes you wary of pursuing projects as well, because the first Kickstarter that I ran for the comic I was writing, I started it in March.
Yeah.
And then,
oh, see?
Like, right then, I mean, just like weeks, I got like, you know, a few hundred bucks the first few weeks, and I'm like, oh, this is great. And then COVID hits, and there's no way anybody could afford to support stuff. You know, so it was really unfortunate timing wise.
It is, and I'm so sorry because you wouldn't have known. I mean, I had no idea. Yeah,
people, I know, like, news and there were outlets who were covering COVID when it broke out, you know, in December, January.
Yep,
but that was all like international headlines. And you know what? We look at some shit if it's not in our backyard. I remember Brady
it's
Mac.
True.
Brady Mac said he don't believe in shit till shit happens, you know.
Right.
So that's how a lot of us were like, okay, wow, this is crazy. You know, hope we get a handle on it. Fast forward 2-3 months, and now suddenly schools is closed. Theaters are closed. People are losing their jobs. Unemployment is skyrocketing, and here we are, you know, at the damn tail end of 2020, wondering what the hell 2021 is going to look like.
Right. Which has me like, I know we're tired of 2020, y'all, but I don't know if I necessarily want to rush 2021
into 2021, right?
Because who knows?
A lot of the experts, like when they were talking, the economy and jobs and stuff, just a lot of the stuff is irreplaceable. The damage that's happened is irreversible going into the next year. So, and then when you think about that as a Black creator, you, again, like we said before, we have to work twice, three times, four times as hard. And then if COVID hits, it's like you're adding weights to the weights.
Yep.
How do we recover? How do we, you know what I mean? How are we able to pursue the project we're pursuing? And a lot of indie artists might go under, and that would be like a grave injustice.
It will be, because, you know, I felt like we were just now really getting to a point where we were getting a lot more great content because, you know, folks are paying attention to indie folks and what they're doing, because the bigger two, or just media in itself, like just mainstream media, just wasn't giving what we wanted. So we said, to hell with it, let's just do our thing. And with the pandemic and everything, that's just kind of, it's still going, but a lot of folks aren't going to be able to do what it is that they were doing or do it at all because they have a million other things to worry about. And also money.